let's talk about is recorded and produced in Treaty 1 territories, on the original lands of the Anishinaabe, Cree, Oji-Cree, Dakota, and Dene peoples, and on the homeland of the Métis Nation. Thank you very much for listening. Hello and welcome to Let's Talk About. I had some very strange technical difficulties a few seconds ago. Just the input device is listed incorrectly on my audio recording software. It says it's recording audio from my headset mic, which is not even hooked up to my headset currently, and not the microphone that I use and I have, which is very weird. But anyways, welcome to Let's Talk About. This is the third last episode of the series, and I think, you know, last week we talked about Bill C-21, and just, you know, as I expected, as I said on that episode, I was expecting that the one amendment to the bill that has been catching so much attention and you know, has been centering so much of the conversation around the bill would be removed or repealed or altered, itself amended. And lo and behold, a week later, the Trudeau government has come out and said that the Liberal government is going to amend or alter, is in consultation to correct and clarify the amendment, which seeks to expand or alter the list of prohibited and restricted firearms in Canada. Previously, it was based on the power output in joules of a firearm for centerfire cartridges, and they are having to alter that because it, as I said in that episode, inadvertently banned certain firearms, certain hunting rifles and shotguns. So, as I mentioned, that as I expected, that amendment's going to change, and it's probably going to, once that's done, people will kind of clean their hands of it and move on. But I'm here to talk about another bill, because while I was researching that bill, I stumbled across something that the day that I was looking at Bill C-21, this piece of legislation was actually slated for its third reading. It had been considered in committee and had been moved for its third reading. And it has now passed its first reading in the Senate. This bill went all through its three readings in the House of Commons and then has now moved on to the Senate, where it has passed its first reading, and then will move on to its second reading soon. There's no indication of when that's going to happen. But its first reading was 4 days ago, which is great. But this is a bill, it's Bill C-235, and the very high number of the bill in the 200s should tip you off that this is a private member's bill that has been introduced. This is not, you know, put forth by the party or by the government or by a minister. This is put forth by a member of parliament And this is specifically has been put forth by the Honorable Jim Carr, who is the MP for Winnipeg South Center here in Manitoba. That's very important because this bill specifically is targeted at improving conditions and economic development in the Prairie provinces, with a particular, you know, important factor that Manitoba is part of the Prairie provinces and will be quite central to, I think, what this bill aims to do. But Bill C-235 is known as an act respecting the building of a green economy in the prairies. So what this act does, or what this bill does, is it's trying to put forth a framework within which multiple different government ministries will come together with industry leaders, provincial governments, municipal governments, indigenous governments, workers' unions, and corporate interests to build a green economy in the prairies, continue that transition of prairie economies, which are commodities-based economies, but with a primary focus of greenifying the prairie provinces, which heavily rely on oil and gas. Manitoba, to a much less significant degree than Saskatchewan and Alberta. Alberta's economy is pretty much tied. Suncor pretty much owns the province of Alberta, but Saskatchewan has a very large oil and gas, a growing oil and gas industry, and they actually get a lot of their energy by burning fossil fuels. However, this bill it's nothing fantastic. It's nothing amazing in terms of like what it aims to do. It's not a bill that's going to like completely alter the way the criminal code works or, the laws of Canada. It's really an administrative bill that's putting forward this framework that is trying to compel the government from an economic development standpoint to front and put up some effort and some money to greenify the prairie economies and really ready the prairie economies for the future, where I've hammered at this repeatedly on this show and on different shows and in different conversations, where Canada, specifically the prairies, are in such a great position to move themselves, and my book actually talks about this a little bit, to move themselves in a direction where we take advantage of the growing need for a green economy and kind of corner the market in a lot of ways. Because a green economy isn't just like, hippy dippy things. Like, there's going to build a green economy is going to need a lot of manufacturing, a lot of engineering, a lot of construction, a lot of infrastructure work, a lot of, it's not just computers and fancy solar cells and things. It's a lot of manufacturing, it's a lot of mining, it's a lot of transportation, it's a lot of shipping. All the things that the Prairie provinces do really, really well, because we have this kind of blue collar infrastructure, this type of, these manufacturing and engineering and construction expertise, specifically doing all of those things in very harsh conditions where building something like a green economy could be quite difficult. Building, Manitoba is very special in the fact that we have so much water and we have so many rivers that we can use hydroelectric power to its fullest extent, to the point where we actually produce more power that can actually be used feasibly by the province of Manitoba every year, and it's a profit source for the province of Manitoba. But the construction of these different systems have to be weatherproofed. A major problem we're seeing in other parts of the world is that their infrastructures are being subjected to very harsh conditions that they've never had to see before. In the prairies, we see incredibly hot summers, incredibly cold winters, and we've been able to build infrastructures, power infrastructures, road infrastructures, and a little bit not great, but like transport infrastructure, shipping infrastructures, production facilities and infrastructures, heating and cooling infrastructures that all stand up to inclement weather and very harsh conditions because we had to. So that leaves us with particular knowledge and skills that I think would be great to turn towards a green economy. And as you will, this is the central crux of this argument, is that, someone is going to have to design all of the green technology solutions. Somebody is going to have to mine the materials necessary for that. Someone is going to have to transport those, ship those goods to a manufacturing plant. Someone's going to have to manufacture the pieces that go into a solar farm or a wind farm or a hydroelectric dam. And then someone's going to have to transport those pieces to where that thing is being constructed. And then someone's going to have to construct that thing and then maintain that thing and constantly be repairing those solar farms, repairing those wind farms, those tulip turbines, and those, the carbon recapture units. These are hard, like blue collar labor jobs that are not going away. You know, they're just transitioning them from one sector of the economy and one industry to another industry, taking the skills that you know over here and turning them over here, where you can continue to do the job that you're trained for and you have expertise in, but it's no longer driven towards, you know, things that pollute and, you know, creating, you know, once I've said it many, many times, is creating a system where we greenify and we look toward, you know, carbon neutral or carbon negative solutions that don't radically change how we live our day-to-day lives. And that's a part of the green economy. We're still going to need those blue-collar labor jobs, but we're going to need to change the conditions around those so those jobs continue, but they are done within a structure, within an infrastructure, within a system that does not create excess carbon and other greenhouse gases. But back to the bill, because I'm almost halfway through this episode already. So point one of the bill, after the definitions and then sightings and things like that. So the framework for a grain prairie economy. So the main crux is that the minister must, in collaboration with the Minister of the Environment, the Minister of Transport, the Minister of Industry, the Minister of Agriculture and Agri-Food, the Minister of Finance, and the Minister of Natural Resources, develop a framework to coordinate local cooperation and engagement in the implementation of federal programs across various sectors with the objective of building a green economy in the prairie provinces. What this means is consultation with the prairie provinces, with the municipal governments, and all of those other industries on the ground to give them federal funding to transition to a green economy and set up a framework where we can feasibly do this. We can transition from oil and gas and over. And you might think, like, we keep getting sold, and a lot of politicians sell this idea that, you know, this transition is going to kill economies, it's going to kill these companies, it's going to kill oil and gas. And it's really not. Like, Suncor, for all their faults, are leading the charge when it comes to that transition from oil and gas to green energy solutions. Suncor and Shell, what I've been told is that they are currently lobbying the government and negotiating with the government under a framework such as this, with, you know, particular aims, to have the government subsidize part of or put federal money into helping them transition. And fronting some of the money that it's going to cost for them to build the infrastructure and do the job training and all the things that they need to do to transition from oil and gas to a green economy to renewable resources and renewable sources of energy. This needs to happen. The government needs to front some of this money, some of this cost. You know, it's going to be cost shared between the federal government, the provincial governments, municipal governments, and private industry to get this done. And what this bill does is that it mandates and it compels all of these different ministers to work together. You know, it's meant to bring environment, transport, industry, agriculture, finance, natural resources all together with these grassroots, ground level groups to construct this framework and get this work done. The consultation, obviously, the consultation point of the bill, point two, in developing the framework, the minister must consult with provincial government representatives responsible for transportation, environment, and employment, and with municipalities, indigenous governing bodies, the private sector, and the representatives of employers and employees in that sector. The last point is unions. So they need to consult with these various different groups. The exception being the consultation process provided for under subsection 2 is only required if such a consultation process is not already provided for under any other act of parliament or any other act of a province or bylaw of the municipality. So, you know, if there basically all this does is like you have to do this consultation unless you're already doing this consultation as a part of like another mandate or another like legal bylaw that exists in a particular area, which some do. It's just like one of those administrative things. So you don't have to, you know, reinvent the wheel or do the work twice. So content, the actual content of the bill. The framework must include measures that promote economic sustainability and growth and employment in the prairie provinces by A, addressing the limited or non-existent transportation options in small cities and communities, and advancing innovative solutions for public transportation services in those cities and communities. So improving public transit in some of the most underserved communities, which are the prairie provinces, because we don't have the public transportation infrastructure of, you know, say a Vancouver or a Toronto or a Montreal. So that's making it more feasible because we are driving based cities and our infrastructure is built around roadways and road systems. But to address the need for better public transportation, that's where the transport ministries come in. Point B, fostering job creation and skills transfer as evidenced by increased employment in prairie regions that rely on traditional energy industries to enable them to build a net zero emissions green economy and mitigate their impact on climate change. So the framework has to create jobs and moving people from those traditional oil and gas fossil fuel industries towards these green economy alternatives. So people don't lose their jobs. They just get moved over somewhere else and they are provided the education and the training that they need to make that transition. So all of these governments can reach that net zero target. Point C, prioritizing projects that generate natural infrastructure and a clean environment, such as tree planting initiatives, solar energy projects, and environmental management of the boreal forest, and that make use of all sources of energy, including nuclear energy. That point is probably going to scare some people if you read the bill. Nuclear energy is actually one of the safest forms of energy because it has to be. It's mandated to be that way, and it's required to be incredibly safe. And we've seen that by when accidents do happen and meltdowns do happen, the vanishingly small number of people who get sick and die. You think of Fukushima, only one person has died since that you know, nuclear incident, Three Mile Island, nobody has died from that. Basically going all the way back to Chernobyl was like the last time there was mass death, and illness from, some, you know, from the meltdown of a nuclear facility, but that also was done because the safety mechanisms were not in place. I did an episode on Chernobyl at the start of this show, if you want to go all the way back and watch that one. But continuing on content, subsection 3D, supporting the continued development of clean energy in fields such as agriculture, forestry, transportation, manufacturing, and tourism. So bringing in all of those different industries to make sure that they are able to use clean energy solutions to continue to reach those net zero targets, and you know, net negative carbon targets. Subsection 3B. E, establishing programs and projects that stimulate a green economy in a way that takes into account local circumstances and the participation of local businesses, governments, and civil society organizations. And F, preparing infrastructure projects to facilitate adaptation to climate change and mitigation of its adverse effects. That point is incredibly important. That final point, 3F, I'm probably not going to get to the reports to Parliament. It's just subsection 4 and then subsection 5. That deals with the tabling of the framework. They have to do it within a year. But subsection 3F is so important, and we're seeing that continuously. The worst part of climate change is always going to be the deaths. It's always going to be the lives that it costs. But the struggle is going to come from the rebuild. It's going to come from the existence within a system where our infrastructure is continuously breaking down. We see that every single time one of these tropical storms hits an area, you know, in the East Coast of the United States and Canada, they're seeing repeated storms where they're not able, like Puerto Rico, to take the southern option, Puerto Rico saw, or I think it was Costa, no, it was Puerto Rico. They saw a massive hurricane, massive tropical storms that knocked out a whole bunch of their infrastructure. And before they could, they were not even able to recover when Hurricane Fiona came and wiped out all the work that they had done, all of the water that they had lost, all of the power that they had, infrastructure that they had lost. They had not been able to rebuild before another storm came. And because of the increasing frequency of storms, that infrastructure is going to be have to be rebuilt faster and hardier than before so we can withstand that. We saw it with Hurricane Fiona when it hit the east coast of Canada, knocking down power lines, disrupting road travel. We saw the supply chain breakdowns in BC with the massive flooding. And we saw it with the power grid in Texas, where they're having more frequent winter storms with an infrastructure that was not built to exist in those conditions. That's what makes the prairie provinces so special, is that we have all of these adverse situations, all of these inclement weather systems, or all of these very harsh conditions, from like the super hot and humid to the super cold and dry. And we've built an infrastructure that can exist within that. It's going to get worse and it's going to get difficult. But point 3F, preparing infrastructure projects that facilitate adaptation to climate change and mitigation of its adverse effects, that doesn't just mean reducing overall greenhouse gas emissions to slow the progress of climate change and the climate crisis. It means creating infrastructures that are resilient, that are able to withstand the conditions under which we are facing. And we're going to need those. It's going to get colder in the winters. It's going to get hotter in the summers. We are going to suffer the adverse effects of climate change. We're going to see record heat waves and record droughts. We're going to see record cold snaps and winter storms. You know, we're already seeing very oddly, it's 0 degrees and it's mid-December. And it was minus 30 a week ago. We're going to see these wild changes, and the infrastructure is going to have to stand up to those changing demands and those changing pressures, and the changing of weather and the long-term climate. And what that's going to do, if we can prepare that infrastructure, we will learn so many good lessons and make so many innovations with respect to, you know, preparing those infrastructure projects and creating those resilient infrastructures, that we can export those ideas and, you know, those innovations, and we can sell them to other regions. We can sell them to the East Coast. We can sell them to the West Coast. We can sell them to Texas and to Florida and to California and to England and to all of these other places. If we can learn those lessons and we can build a resilient infrastructure, we can go to all these places because we have seen similar conditions to what they're going to face. And we've figured out a way to create a resilient infrastructure that can stand up to those impacts. We can get them to say, we can say, hey, pay us and we will create that infrastructure for you as well. We will export our ideas to you. We will export our solutions to you. And that will do an amazing things for the prairie economy, because we will be able to turn the labor power and the expertise that we have to this new problem, to this new industry. We can master that new industry, learn all the things that we need to do, create all the innovations we need to create a resilient economy and a function, like resilient infrastructure and a resilient economy that works in the age of the climate crisis, that will provide stable long-term growth for the prairie provinces. And once we do that, we can turn to the rest of the world and say, our doors are open. We can do this for you too. And that's going to lead to massive growth potential for the prairie provinces. It's absolutely amazing stuff. But that's super important. That's incredibly important. And I totally skipped over subsection 3E, which is establishing programs and projects that stimulate a green economy in a way that takes into account local circumstances and the participation of local businesses, governments, and civil society organizations. So what this effectively does, or what this mandates within the framework, is that you need to have these projects that don't just, you know, provide a band-aid or a golden bullet or a blanket. You know, everybody has to do things the exact same. You have to go to these individual communities You know, go to these local businesses and these local governments and these local civil society organizations and say, how do you, what do you need specifically? What are your specific experiences? Because Alberta is very different to Manitoba. Manitoba is very different to Saskatchewan. Winnipeg is very different to Brandon. Calgary is very different to Edmonton. Edmonton and Calgary are very different to Regina and Saskatoon, which are very different to Winnipeg and Brandon and Selkirk. You know, and then we southern cities and towns are very different to the northern communities, the mountain communities in Alberta, like Banff, the northern communities like Churchill here in Manitoba, the Interlake communities like Gimli. They're going to need very specific responses and face very unique challenges. You know, the biodiversity and the diversity of experience in the Prairie Provinces is a good and bad thing. It's going to necessitate, like this says with the framework, is you're going to need to take into account local circumstances. What infrastructure do you have? What skill sets do you have? What knowledge do you have? What financial financial means do you have? How do we get things to you? What infrastructure exists to ship things to you or get things out from where you are? And then what are your unique needs? How is climate change impacting you specifically? And how do we meet those challenges? You know, one of the major problems, you know, in Manitoba, we get our power from 99.9% renewable energy, 99.9% hydroelectric power. The problem is that 0.1% that is propane, because there are some communities who are not on our power grid, that they need to fly in propane or have it trucked in because they don't have power lines that reach them. We can sell the excess hydroelectric power we have to Saskatchewan so they can get some of their power from a renewable resource, but we can't then sell it to Alberta because there's not enough. They don't have access to the amount of renewable energy that we do, and they have much less than Saskatchewan does by being neighbors with Manitoba. So we need to look at each situation individually, each province within the prairies, each city and town within the prairies with a unique lens, and look at the unique circumstances that exist for that community in order to better serve them and create this resilient infrastructure and create this functioning green economy. But this bill is incredibly important, and it's making its way very quickly through the Senate. So the third reading was December 7th in the House, and then the first reading in the Senate was a day later. Like, that is incredibly fast that it went from there to there and has already passed its first reading and its second reading. The Parliament's about to go on their Christmas holiday, so it's going to be in recess until after the new year. But it's moving quite quickly. So within a year of this bill being passed, we will likely see this framework established and tabled. I've got about a minute left, so I can talk about the reporting framework. So the tabling of the framework, this is subsection 4.1. Within 12 months after the day of on which this act comes into force, the minister must prepare a report setting out the framework referred to in section 3 and cause the report to be tabled in each House of Parliament on any of the first 15 days on which the House is sitting after the report is complete. The minister must publish the report on the departmental website within 10 days after the report has been tabled in both Houses of Parliament. And then finally, this is going to be a very important piece of legislation, and I think people need to pay attention to it because it has very consequential impacts on the future of the prairies. I'm going to end it there. Thank you very, very much for listening. If you're listening live on 101.5 UMFM, keep that dialed at 101.5. We've got some great songs and great shows coming up right after this one, and you can catch me this Thursday on The Hockey Show with Teebs, 5:30 to 6:30, right here on 101.5 UMFM. If you're listening on Spotify, thank you very much for your download. And as always, have yourselves a wonderful, wonderful week. Stay safe, everybody.